This is Hidden Killers Year in Review, a look back at the biggest stories of 2025. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Brian Koberger. A lot happening since Judge Hippler said, you know, we got to be a little more transparent. And transparent certainly is what we're seeing a lot more of these days. As the developments continue on, it makes you raise your eyebrows, literally, between the Amazon trail, the criminology case essay that reads kind of like a how-to guide, and the mysterious disappearance of his phone at just the right moment. Prosecutors are laying out what they claim is a carefully calculated plan. But how much of this sticks in a courtroom? Sounds good on paper, sounds good on the internet, but how is it going to read to a jury? And how much is just a really bad coincidence? Which I'm going to guess that's going to be the next argument. Joining us is defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis. Eric, when prosecutors say this wasn't just a murder, but a methodical act of forensic evasion, DNA scrubbed, cars cleaned, license plates swapped, and trash ditched at 4 a.m., you know, in little baggies with rubber gloves, because that's normal. How do you begin to kind of push back on this as a defense? I mean, is that a red flag, and can it still be explained away, these sort of things?
You know, sometimes in a case like this, the defense looks at it and says, hey, my guy couldn't have done this. He's not some mastermind criminal. He's not smart enough to pull this off, that kind of thing. But with Koberger, he was a PhD student in criminology. And so if there's anybody who knows how to methodically go about trying to commit a crime and then covering it up and get away with it, gosh, a PhD student in criminology would be a pretty good candidate for that. And so that is certainly not a defense that his side is going to be able to put forth.
Especially when you're writing a paper about it and it doesn't look that good. I mean, nobody has, I guess, seen the whole thing. We've seen little excerpts of it, but I'm curious to see what that paper looks like if it comes out, when it comes out. We obviously have seen his questions that were put out on the DeSales website, you know, when he was studying, and those have since been taken down, asking criminals to basically tell me how you were feeling as you were committing said crime. And on the surface, if you're studying criminology, it makes sense. But in the context of, oh, look what he's accused of doing, that gives it a whole other light. Could that just be a coincidence, though? He was studying criminology, even though he seems like he's researching very deeply how to even feel about committing a crime like this.
Yes, some peculiar developments from Koberger's past that on the surface, some say could, you know, tie him to exactly what these allegations say he did. Now, on the other hand, there is sort of a trend in the law, depends on the jurisdiction, but against using extrinsic types of statements, and especially we look at rap lyrics. You know, a lot of rappers would say, hey, look, I was just saying that because it's part of the song and I'm trying to sell records, whatever. Koberger could use that principle and say, hey, look, I was simply doing my classwork, and this shouldn't be held against me in a murder case. That would be unfair. And some judges are open to that idea.
Didn't Koberger, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, there's so many facets. Didn't he try to like make a rap song at one point in time? Wasn't that out? Do you remember? Like, I think this is a thing. I think it was like years ago that he attempted that. I got to look into that. But I think like early on, yeah, when people were looking into this and kind of digging up everything, like with the blogging and I think that might have been one of those things. That'd be an interesting. It's all a rap lyric. It's all like he got the mask. He got the knife sheath. He shot a music video. Here's the music video. And it just happens to be shot in front of King Road. I'm making that up. The fact that we have more on the Amazon receipts now, he bought the knife or the exact type of knife with the sheath, with the sharpener, quite a ways back prior to the murders, about 6 months roughly. But now we have receipts that are out there that shows he also bought a mask that happens to look exactly like what one of the surviving roommates saw. You know, buying those items individually, not a crime by any means, but contextually, is this showing premeditation, considering how far back some of these purchases were to the crime?
That's exactly what the prosecutors are going to look at, because to prove first-degree murder, you have to prove premeditation. You have to prove that he deliberated about this, thought about it one way or the other, and said, no, I'm going to go ahead and stab these four people. That also he had malice aforethought. That also means that the prosecution has to prove planning. And when we're talking about allegedly procuring supplies that are going to be necessary to carry out a quadruple stabbing, namely a knife and the sheath, and then those things are found, or the sheath is found at the scene. And then when you add in elements to try to cover your tracks and not be identified like a mask, all of these things start to have a cumulative effect, which makes it look like the walls are closing in on Cobra.
Yeah, well, another wall that's closing in is also his, I like to go look at the stars alibi, now that we've learned there were no stars that night. It was actually very cloudy, very low cloud base as well, so it was foggy on the ground as well. So he's out there looking at the stars. Why didn't Ann Taylor at least go back and check the 7-day forecast just to see what's going on? I mean, it's not hard to look back and find that sort of information before you say he's looking at the stars, or was it more of a figurative way of speaking, which I'm sure will be what's argued.
yeah, certainly. And, you know, but defense, especially in a high profile case, and the prosecution as well, both sides have to realize that representations they make that become public are going to be scrutinized. They're going to be picked apart. People are going to be looking for holes or support or corroboration or lack thereof. And so this seems like a significant oversight and an error, because, you know, that would be an easy thing to kind of shore up and establish. You know, of course, she could argue it was metaphorical. She could argue that in this specific stretch of the road, there actually wasn't much fog or whatever. But it doesn't look good.
No, it's not a good look. And as we're also learning, more and more surveillance footage is out there. Some Ring doorbell cameras, as more things continue to be unsealed. Surveillance footage showing his car in the area right before the murders. Several different, you know, and the argument from the pro-burgers is it's a white car. They had it wrong at the beginning. It was the wrong year of Elantra. It's like, yeah, it's not a great shot, but when you put it in context with multiple camera shots and you go, okay, this pretty much looks like the car. And then he changed his plate shortly thereafter. That's not a good look either, when the vehicle that looks like yours is right there in the crime scene and then you turn your phone off.
Totally that. And then the changing of plates thing is going to be argued as consciousness of guilt.
Yep.
Like, that's something that criminals do when they're trying to get away with crimes. I'm not aware of any alternative innocent explanation for changing the plates. Maybe there is one. Maybe the defense is looking into that. I don't know. But they should probably look for that, because without some innocent possible explanation, it really makes it look like it's a guy who's trying to get away with murder.
Yeah, it certainly does. And it makes you wonder a little bit too, because they're trying to throw in the autism argument. And again, it's a scale. So you can be, you know, staring at the wall, or you can be insanely productive and a genius, just depending where you're at. And a lot of times you're kind of socially awkward. You do things a little bit different than most. And even, you know, in a highly functional way, it can be coming across as, well, that's a weird way of doing things. Do you think that that's part of the reason why they're trying to throw the autism argument in there? Not to say, well, I mean, they've already had one trying to say that they couldn't, or he couldn't physically have done it because of some other condition. But I actually think it's not a horrible argument of, look, this guy is really awkward. He's autistic. He's always, you know, been a little bit out there, not a murderer, but just, you know, he does things different. And some people could look at it as suspicious or weird. And that's all it is. It's just all these weird coincidences of him, you know, throwing out trash at 4 a.m. and cleaning his car like that, changing the plates, looking really freaked out when the police pull him over twice in a row. I mean, there's a lot of things one could say. Well, you know, if anyone in this sort of, you know, mindset or has this, has autism on the level where he's at, would be acting kind of awkward. Is that where you think they may go, considering the stars don't seem to be a very strong argument at this point?
I think that that would be a smart move because, look, as defense, you have these set of circumstances the prosecution is bringing, and they're going to try to show how they're suspicious and unusual and something we wouldn't expect, that kind of thing. And so for defense to look at it, if this gentleman does actually have autism, that would be a potential explanation for peculiarities for, you know, the jury might think, oh, why would an innocent person do that? That doesn't make sense. Oh, it's because perhaps he thinks differently. Perhaps he acts differently, digests information differently, that sort of thing. So I think it could potentially neutralize some of the, you know, unusual aspects of the evidence that the prosecution is going to bring forward. And that could land with some jurors, especially those folks who might know people or have people in their family with autism. Mm-hmm.
The fact is, though, it'd be a lot of coincidences. I mean, like a ridiculous amount of coincidences for the behavior that we've seen to think, oh, this guy's not a murderer. that's, you know, it's like you're doing all the things that add up to having, you know, been this guy. There's that trip to Clarkston as well. Some are interpreting that as maybe disposing of evidence. There's surveillance footage at an Albertsons and Costco just hours after the murders. Again, looks a little odd, something that we haven't heard of before that, I went to Costco that morning. I was living my normal life.
Yeah, you know, those things, certainly prosecution is going to argue, hey, that gives him the opportunity mm-hmm. to cover his tracks, to try and dispose of inculpatory evidence and materials that could link him to this crime. Now, on the other hand, defense might say, hey, that is not sufficiently incriminating. That's something that just everybody could do. You can go to Albertsons in the morning. That's not a crime. And so I'll be interested to see really the potency of those specific details and whether defense can sort of neutralize those by saying, hey, anyone's allowed to go to Costco, man, if that's all right.
Sure. And obviously it is. I want to bring up a graphic here that I put together while I was on vacation, because on vacation, what do? I sit there and I look at true crime things. This is a very interesting correlation, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. Maybe you've seen it on my Twitter or something the other day. Okay, it's up behind me. I'm going to blow that up a little bit. The look. We got the picture here of Koberger, this one, this is the morning after the murders, wearing that really tight white shirt, which always felt weird to begin with. It's like, why are you like, well, he's, I don't know, maybe this is how he wears his shirts. It's weird. And then you also have the movie American Psycho right next to him. and you'll look at the dress of the character in American Psycho. And I don't have this, but you also have the movie Psycho, where the murder takes place in the shower, where he's taking that picture. Both have the word psycho in the title. This is a man who has talked about feeling very different, very outside, very not part of the norm. I'm sure, you know, in my conjecture, probably been called psycho before by some people, like he's crazy or whatever, just people in conjecture saying those sort of things. And to me, this looks like a nod. This looks like a really weird nod to the fact of if he did, or the allegation that he committed these crimes and thinks he's getting away with it. Like, I'm smarter than all of you, sitting there with the thumbs up. There's been a lot of weird correlations here where it's like, wow, I think he's, again, thinking he's smarter than the room and assuming he's never going to get caught, but he's going to put something like this out there of a F you to the world. I don't know. I found it really creepy. Psycho, American Psycho, there's a lot of weird correlations, I think, that tie back to that picture. I think there's more of a reason for the shower picture than meets the eye.
There could be, you know, there is a subset of there's kind of a subculture that has romanticized American Psycho. You have this sort of handsome, smart person who also gets away with these gruesome murders, mm-hmm. and everything's and everything is all right for him. And I just can't help but wonder whether there are some resemblances there. You know, Koberger was smart. He was a PhD student. He's not a terrible looking young man, whatever. And so, you know, do some folks aspire towards that romanticization, that glamorization of egregious murder that happens in some of our media, including in American Psycho? I think it's a fair question.
Well, and there's also, it's never been completely proven, I wonder if it will in court, the Papa Rogers account that was out on social media immediately after the murders, before Koberger was arrested. There was someone out there with that, if you remember this case way back, like almost 3 years ago now, the profile of the character looked a lot like Brian Koberger. And it was, they labeled Papa Rogers. And this person seemed to have knowledge of the crime scene that no one else did, talking about the knife sheath early on, almost challenging people who were trying to figure out the case. And immediately after his arrest, the guy who was posting under those accounts completely disappeared. Again, we don't know if it was him, but person did seem to know a lot about knife sheaths and things like that, that no one else knew of at the time. So that to me, if it was him, shows a propensity for trying to play with the public, try to play with people psychologically. That's where this comes in. And I'm like, I think there was some joy here. I think there was, I'm smarter than the rest of the room. Y'all treat me like crap, but at the end of the day, I'm going to show you, I'm going to get away with this, and I'm going to be right in front of your eyes and no one's going to even know it. Surprise, Brian, people figured out the riddle. But in his mind, allegedly, I'm wondering, I'm really wondering if these are things that can play in. I don't know how would anything like this play out in court, showing consciousness of guilt? I guess you'd have to really somehow find some reference to him, you know, admitting that he's doing it for those reasons. But it certainly is not a good look.
It is a chilling prospect if that, in fact, was what was happening. In fact, I remember when I was a prosecutor, I had a stalker slash arson case where the individual assumed this digital identity and was, you know, referencing song lyrics and weird cryptic facts about what happened. And ultimately, we tied him to those communications via IP addresses and a really extensive digital footprint and investigation. I'm sure the government has looked into that. But if it comes to be that that Koberger was doing that, that is damning, especially for the death penalty phase, because it shows not only that he committed this quadruple stabbing, but also that he had some kind of gleeful, perverse gratification from like messing with the public about it.
Like, could something like this show up in the death penalty phase if he's found guilty? Where, I mean, the photo I'm sure will, if in fact he's found guilty. But could the prosecution make an argument that, look, yes, this is a creepy ass photo, but look what it also looks like? Could they make the correlation arguments in there? Could they admit basically American Psycho footage or pictures like this or Psycho things to make reference to go, look how sadistic this is?
I think they might want to. I think a court would be taking a real risk, mm-hmm. if it allowed in that next level of what you said, the sort of American Psycho footage, that kind of thing. Because even if there is a connection, even if it is relevant, it's possibly unduly prejudicial under what's called Rule of Evidence 403, meaning that it is so likely to inflame the passions of the jury that it's just too unfair and we can't let it in because the jury might base their decision in part on that inflammatory evidence. I think that would be a concern at the penalty phase.
There's a dog piece of fur that was found. We still don't know if it was from one of the victim's dogs. How long does it take to identify dog DNA and compare it to the, I would think by now we would have an answer to that, or maybe it is, and maybe it's just still sealed up. We've known about the dog hair for a while, but as of now, we still don't know the answer to if it matches the dog. That piece of dog fur, that tiny little dog fur, that one, I think, could be the nail in the casket if, in fact, it is from one of the victim's dogs.
How in the world would an innocent person have that kind of contact? with the dog if they weren't the individual in there who committed these crimes. I just can't foresee even a theoretical innocent explanation under those circumstances, absent some sort of planting of evidence argument.
Sure. And I don't know how you even go down that road. It gets to be a little too insane. Snarkles may save the day. I don't know what the dog's name was, but at the end of the day, Snarkles may save the day in this case. And, really show that jury beyond all the other things, without a doubt, what a lot of us are thinking. Of course, innocent until proven guilty. We'll see what continues to come out.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Let's dig into the mind behind a murder here. An alleged mind behind a murder. Let's talk about the mind prosecutors believe was behind them. The case against Brian Koberger, we're seeing that might be one of the most behaviorally fascinating sets of details to hit a courtroom in, I don't know, very, very long time. We're digging deeper and deeper into this and finding more and more bizarre correlations. Criminology student accused of quadruple homicide wrote a paper on how to process a murder scene. Could be normal, could be not, and may have used his knowledge to try and get caught, or to not get caught, depending on how you look at it. Joining us, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. We got surveillance runs, a tactical mask purchase nearly a year in advance, the knife purchase online, and a guy who's accused of going full digital ghost mode for just the right 2 hours. How much of this behavior is screaming planning versus panic to you? And from your perspective, what stands out most about the mindset behind this kind of operation, if it is one?
Yeah, I definitely didn't see any panic in anything, because again, he doesn't seem to have a pattern in his life of ever panicking. He is a planner, he's a strategist, he's a researcher, he's fixated on things, at least from what we've seen over periods of time. So I think it was all part of that planning process. You know, when I was really looking at this before today, Tony, what really struck me, especially with the planning steps he did, because he's a criminology student and he's studying these things, I really was wondering, you know, at what point he decided to stop studying and start acting. Again, pure conjecture, innocent until proven guilty, but say it is him or someone like him. You know, at what point did it go from fantasy of the study to wanting to take the action? Because I don't know if he actually went to college, went to get his PhD in this to do this act. I think, because again, from what his earlier writings were saying, you know, he's been what looks, again, I'm playing armchair psychologist here because I'm not licensed in it, but just conjecture, doing that deep empathetic dive of what it must look like from his perspective the best we can. He was on a journey in life to try to get some sort of emotional stimulus from anything, from something. And I think some of the glimmers he was getting, plus some of the validation he was getting from his undergraduate studies in criminology, were his potential only glimpses in getting some sort of emotional rush or rise that helped him feel a bit better about himself. Mm-hmm. And so as he kept going down that road, I think, you know, you start that escalation of, well, let me try to do this.
Yeah.
I really need a little bit more. Let me try to do a little bit more. So there's it's like with everything, there's an escalation. You know, people don't start out just killing someone. There's an escalation of violence and an action that's an impetus. And I think we have obviously the same thing here. There's a fantasy going on that started on this path. And I was just curious at what point it went from fantasy to action. Don't know whether it was actually from buying a K-bar online or buying the mask, or was that just something he wanted to see what it looked like to buy, to experiment with, to look at, and then see what I mean? I'm really curious in his mind when that transition, you know, happened and it just flipped the switch, or was it a gray, slow transition? I don't know.
He seems to be someone who had a lot of difficulty
finding emotion or feeling in general from, again, this conjecture based on what we've seen out there and what he's even said in his own writings on those blogs, allegedly. And then when he gets into college and he's doing his research studies, the questions that he asked in some of those papers, I think a lot of people found to be interesting. If you're just looking at it from any perspective of someone who's studying criminal behavior and psychology, they wouldn't be that big of red flags. But then you go into context of what he's accused of doing. It's like he was trying to learn how to feel when committing a crime or if he were to commit a crime. And it makes you then wonder those responses he was getting back from people, you know, was that a catalyst? Was that something where he was really feeling something, feeling it through somebody else, this sort of dark behavior, doing this sort of thing? And then was that the switch? Was that what flipped for him to go, I really want to feel this, because he was getting such a joy or whatever it would be out of this sort of research and looking into humans who have done this before and discovering, maybe he's got a penchant for this as well.
It could be. I can't remember the exact name of the case, but I covered a case about 2 years ago that was a South Korean case, actually, and it was a female, and this female South Korean had committed murder. Cold-blooded murder of this person. And I remember they actually, when they interviewed her, she admitted to the murder. And she said that she was studying criminology and wondered what it would feel like to murder someone. She literally said it just like that. And she's convicted. Again, I could probably pull up the name and send it to you.
A broken brain, as you would say. I mean,
broken brain and total, psychopathy, because lack of empathy for the action. Mm-hmm. They wanted to see and experience what it felt like to murder someone. Yeah. I think, conjecture on this one, with serial killers in general is like, there's an escalation there to see what it would feel like. He definitely seems to be a patient individual and patient person. So long-term planning, relating it to the world of spies, which I worked within, individuals that are eventually come to our side and commit espionage on against their home country and work for us, it's never, ever been on a whim. They have actually planned that first move and overture towards us for decades in some cases. Lots of planning, lots of establishing behavior patterns so it could be hidden in plain sight from their own people. I mean, there's so many parallels. That's why my world, which I originated from in counterintelligence to here, is extremely congruent, because it's all about understanding, watching, observing, and predicting from behavior patterns of others.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah, humans are humans at the end of the day.
Yes, they are.
And they're interesting. I want to talk about this. I sent it to you the other day when I was on vacation. I was sitting on a cruise ship going, oh my God, I think I found something. And
For those watching, yeah. Tony and I keep texting each other, even on vacation, these cases.
We do. It's like, I love it. It's like my daughter's out playing. I'm like, let's look into Koberger more. So I did that, and this is what I came up with, and I even dug a little bit deeper after this and found more weird correlations. And again, this is conjecture, but it gets really creepy, especially too when you take it in line with the Papa Rogers posts that many believe were him. Online prior to the arrest, that was the posting, and the profile looked like Koberger, but it was an artistic rendition of a old military individual. And he knew many aspects of the case that nobody else did, including the knife sheath, before any of that was public. So it made people believe this might be him taunting the media, taunting the public, and thinking he's smarter than the room. Because I think most of his life, he felt like he wasn't, or maybe he did think he was, but nobody understood him or saw it for what they should have in his mind. And that's where that began. But I also think that's where this ties into what we have here. If you're watching on YouTube, and if you're not, go check it out. We have an image, the image of him in the shower, which I think is important. The setting, the shower with the big, with the white shirt buttoned up to the top to like a very extreme level. It looks awkward. And then next to it, images from American Psycho, and the character there in basically a white It's not a suit. It's a like a smock type thing that he was putting on to. Oh, holy shit. Look at this one. The blood. Everybody's like, did he do this? Did he do that? And is that a nod to that too, of not getting the blood on him? Anyway, the character in the movie looks a lot like him and is wearing very similar type outfit, very clean looking. And then you also have the movie Psycho as well, which he's in the shower with this picture. And, you know, the main shower scene there is that as well. Both movies have the word psycho in it. Both have characters that I would say, you know, a little reminiscent of Koberger from what we know. Norman Bates, I don't think of Far Cry. And American Psycho as well. What's your thoughts on all this? Is this a big F you to the world, thinking that he's not going to get caught and he's in plain sight and he's doing the thumbs up in the shower? And this is a total nod to those movies that may have inspired him. And then the actions that he may have taken.
Maybe.
So I'm getting excited about it, but I know.
I know. So I'm going to throw, I'll do two things. I'll throw a wet towel on it first, and then I'll say maybe on the other.
Okay.
So anytime we see things like this, as a human being, as our species does, we try to find patterns that may or may not be there.
Sure.
So because we have confirmation bias that weighs in on this. And so we start looking for patterns and try to create patterns that may or may not exist. And so that's my wet blanket. But on the other side, what I'm hoping for when we see the prosecution come out or through the search returns is that there'll be evidence and data points that support what it is you're saying. Cause it makes total sense, you know, from my looking at it as well. Whoa, wow. That's some pretty big shit right there. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do though, is to support that with data. Mm-hmm. And so one way we could do that, there's a couple cases I covered that dealt with psychopathy in individuals that actually became extremely fixated. This guy was a psychopath diagnosed by one of my clinicians on my team. And he was, instead of killing people, part of his psychopathy, he was bilking people, innocent people, out of billions of dollars. And one of the things that he would do is to kind of get that emotional rush from situations, he would actually have $1 million in cash in a suitcase, walk into a dive bar, get falling down drunk, and you put that suitcase right by the door to see if anyone would steal and walk out with it. And no one had any idea it was $1 million. And that's what he was doing, part of his need for emotional response and stimulation. The only thing they found, though, in his apartment, this was the type of guy that had, it was complete empty shell, nothing in the mm-hmm. apartment, but he modeled himself after Catch Me If You Can. The movie. Mm-hmm. And so when we went to the interview strategy of him, when psychopathy, you're only dealing with grandiosity because that's their only motivation, is to be better than, to be grander mm-hmm. and have this greater narrative than everyone else that we see with these serial killers, is that we use that as a lever of influence to, when we had a conversation with him, it's like, you'll never be as good as, what was the guy's name? And Catch Me If You Can. Abagnale.
Okay.
Abagnale is the actual, you know, the actor was DiCaprio, but Frank Abagnale was actually the actual real person mm-hmm. behind Catch Me If You Can. And so we actually used grandiosity and referenced him when interviewing him. So mm-hmm. take that long narrative I just gave, my apologies for that, and now apply to this situation. I'd be very curious is if they ever found any data points, streaming the videos in the house, or researching of those things, images or anything else that actually would then validate the things we're seeing here. That's what I'd be looking for.
That was the next question I had, and I texted you that day too, because I'm like, all of a sudden all these spiders are coming off of this one idea. And it was, did they look through, I mean, obviously they went through the house and they took all the stuff, but you know, that's a lot of stuff. I don't know. I was thinking there'd be a lot of stuff to go through. I don't know. You had said there's probably not a lot. It's, you know, he seems to be kind of like that, just kind of simplistic.
And I apologize to interrupt. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. I mean, when we look at the Rex Heuerman case, you know, Long Island Murder, oh my God, the guy's a hoarder. So that's like a nightmare.
But my wondering was, you know, what if, does he have the book? Does he have American Psycho? Does he have the movie? Does he have a DVD? Does he have a VHS of it or whatever? You know, and is there anything in that? Like, is that, you know, is that something, you know, kind of his own, you know, little Bible, if you will, where sometimes people will mark things up or put certain things with it because it reminds them of a certain idea or thing. I'm wondering if they find anything, if in fact, again, this is just 1,000% conjecture. We don't know if he owned American Psycho or Psycho or anything like that. But I'm wondering if they did find that, if they found anything with it that that would also then show, oh, look at this.
I would imagine, so the way I would be doing this, as I, if I was doing a search, and I'm sure these people are doing the same thing, anything that kind of pops up in your viewpoint of what you're collecting rings true to violent crime or things like that, mm-hmm. including movies that your eyes, because remember, when you're doing searches and seizures, you're going in with a confirmation bias. You're trying to confirm the things that you've been told to look for. And that's going to be one of the things they're going to be told to look for, is look for any kind of violent references on social media, mm-hmm. on tapes, videos, DVDs, streaming services, whatever it is. And so I would, as an investigator, I'm pretty sure that would stand out to them and they would collect that and you'd have an overlay. So the way I'm thinking about this in my mind, if our conjecture is accurate and this is a play on what he exposed to Psycho, that will come out in prosecution,
mm-hmm.
Because it will be there if it was. If it's not there and they did all the searches, then I think we just have our own confirmation bias. But
yeah,
I'm kind of predicting, I'm thinking they're probably going to find something like that.
I'm wondering, because it's strong. It is strong. There's so many references that you can pull out of that one picture, because it's such a weird picture of him in the shower with the thumbs. Like, why? Why is that picture even taken?
So exactly the point. So granted, I threw that wet blanket on it looking for data points, but now look at the arc.
Mm-hmm.
What would inspire someone to take this photo?
Yeah.
It stands out. Now, granted, last chat, I commented, wow, this is the only time he smiled before that we've seen. And as in a response, people threw out, you know, there's and like maybe three other photos I saw of him smiling in different situations, which looked a bit more forced for the social environment he was in those moments. Again, I'm not defending or not defending, because there were a very few other data points of him smiling. But when have we seen anyone, have you taken a picture in your shower with a shirt like that?
No.
Have you known anyone else in your life that has ever done that?
No,
Me neither. It's such a deviation from what a normal human being would do. That we've seen in our experience. Again, I've covered these cases with you. I've never seen that before. That stands out. So again, you ask yourself, from his perspective, what would inspire you to want to take this picture?
Yeah. And it makes you wonder, because it's not like this is a picture where he's going out for dinner on a hot date or something. He's like, all right, I'm going to look real creepy in this white shirt and it's not going to work.
He came off of a really long, bad night.
Yes, exactly.
And hadn't seen sunlight for about a year.
Oh, it's very vampire-ish. But it's so bizarre. And then for what we're learning now, and I don't know the timestamp on this, if this was taken before or after, but that he went to some locations. I think Costco was one of them, and there was another. I don't have it in front of me. And people are wondering, you know, was he disposing of evidence over in some dumpsters or something, and dressed like this? I don't know. It was really creepy to come across this photo and kind of the correlations there. And again, it could be complete confirmation bias because we're so damn into this, but I don't know. I think there's something to it, because that photo doesn't make any sense as why'd you take it, and the setting of it, everything. It seems it's playing games. And as we know, a lot of people like this like to play games, and they like to have their messages be decoded, or if not even know that they're messages. I'm wondering if this is one of them.
Well, and let's look at this from a behavior pattern. So you said you saw, and I saw it too, you know, the trips to Costco, mm-hmm. we see this photo. All right. So if it's not what conjecture we have it as, what is it?
Yeah.
So in other words, how many other times did he go to Costco? How many other photos does he have taken these shirts? How many other photos does he have in a bathroom next to a shower stall, you know, throughout the course of his life? How many photos did he do selfies smiling? I mean, so again, if you're going to say that this was just part of his normal everyday activities, going to Costco at this time of day, taking these photos, okay, it's mm-hmm. part of his normal activity. Show me the pattern of his normal activity where this falls in the line of.
Yeah. Is there a lot of selfies on his phone that look like this, or is this kind of the standout one?
All right. So you're looking for data points that can show consistency. And if it's inconsistent with those patterns, that's when you say, what was going on different that day or that small period of time that was incongruent with the other patterns in life. And when you align it with that, and then you have other evidence that topples on top of it, like DNA touch DNA on a nice sheaf, you're like, of course.
Yeah. There's a lot piling up and it's getting far more damning, cleaning, changing the car plates. We're learning about more video evidence showing the car in the general area of the house that night. It's stacking up. And I know Ann Taylor knows all this. She has everything there. The walls are closing in. I'm just wondering how much further, what else they can do on this or what they're going to be arguing.
So interesting on that too. We haven't heard much from Ann Taylor lately, have we?
No.
I think she's run out.
I think
the last play with was autism. And she's run out. And again, from the very beginning, we're like, why is prosecution not fighting back on these things? And our conjecture was because they have a lot of stuff we haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're getting the trickles, and every trickle we're getting, we're like, oh my.
There's a lot
A
lot.
Oh my.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.